Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Daryl Urbanski, your host as always. And today I'm thrilled to reintroduce our returning guest, Jared Krause. Jared is an M&A advisor, property investor, mentor, and speaker. He runs Buying Online Businesses, the world's largest community for buying and selling successful online businesses. He also co-hosts the Property Pals Australia podcast, where he shares his property investment expertise. With over 8 years of experience as the founder and CEO of Buying Online Businesses, Jared has helped countless individuals achieve financial independence. He's also a dedicated community volunteer with the Mankind Project, a nonprofit which conducts challenging and highly rewarding trainings for men at every stage of life. I've asked Jared to come back again to update us on his story and insights on building sustainable income through smart investments in a post-COVID world. So Jared, thanks so much for coming back and joining us again, man. How are you doing?
Thank you. I'm doing really good. Thank you so much for having me on again. I'm thrilled to come back and chat. Post-COVID world's a different place and there's some great opportunities out there.
Yeah. So people that are interested in your background, I already told a bit of it in the bio. They can go listen to the first interview. How was COVID for you business-wise? For a lot of people, I think we didn't know what we were getting into when it happened. I knew I was in Vietnam at the time. They locked down in first week of February. Like the rest of the world was figuring out what was happening. It was like China made their announcement. Vietnam shares a land border. And they were like, F you, we don't trust you. And they just locked down the whole country right after. A lot of the world, it was what's happening, what's this, what's that. So can you speak to what's changed, like the before and after, so to speak?
Yeah, in terms of my business or the niche and the industry that I'm in?
No, both.
Yeah, okay. My business honestly hadn't changed that much. I was already fully online staff, online community. If anything, we did well, to be honest, because I help people replace their income, initially replace their income and then move into larger investments and make a lot more money. And a lot of people through that time, oh my God, I can't work. Oh, I'm at home for so much time. What can I do differently to maybe make an income online? So that was beneficial, certainly. Now, after COVID, what had happened with the markets around the world had changed the environment of acquiring online businesses. Now, through COVID, what happened was e-commerce brands, there was a lot of e-commerce aggregators. So basically private equity firms and large private equity firms battling off each other to acquire e-commerce brands and Amazon businesses. And they were just buying them in bulk and just paying ridiculous multiples for them. Multiple is how we value a business that we're acquiring or selling. And yeah, the multiples just increased because you had so much money and that was raised, and then so much ego in terms of just acquiring these businesses. At times, a business would get listed for sale, and I was speaking to a broker, and one party had asked him, oh, has somebody else made a bid on this for this business? And it only just got listed, and they said, yep, it's around this price. And the other person just didn't even really do due diligence, just said, cool, I'll pay this much, let's go. And it was a bit more. And it was just a crazy time. So what happened then is increased multiples from e-commerce across the board. A lot more people were moving into this space and increased the valuations of businesses, online businesses. And what happened was it became a seller's market. And a lot of businesses were selling for cash, selling quite fast. There was a lot more money around. And then what eventually started to happen, early 2023-ish, money became tighter, right? Interest rates crept up and money became a lot tighter in the environment around the world. And what happens when interest rates creep up and money gets tighter is more people have, like, interest rates go up, they have their repayments go up for whatever they have debt on, right? And it could be good debt, it could be bad debt, it could be debt on their houses, cars, whatever it is. And a lot of people bought property through the COVID space because it was going bananas, right? Well, in basically the property banana zone. And so what happened then is, like, a lot of people realized, like, damn, I've got like all this debt and I've got to pay all this debt and money's a lot tighter. And then there's people with these businesses, I need to free up some money, I need to free up some cash and start selling businesses. So it started to become a buyer's market. I would say basically since the start of 2024, much more of a buyer's market, multiples decreased. There's less cash around. So it's had a crazy fluctuation. And I think it's really cool because you've seen two cool sides of it. And now with my audience that didn't get in through that COVID gnarliness or craziness, they're in a pretty prime position to acquire something great at the bottom of the market, I would say. Probably, I would say multiples may not get lower than this again. Who knows? Yeah.
That's great insight. So now when you talk about buying and selling a business, can we speak to that? Because some people, first off, this might be a new concept for some people. Again, not everyone will have listened to our first interview where you can spend a lot of time, blood, sweat, and tears to build a business, or you can just buy a business that's already running. You can also do like a roll-up where you can buy multiple businesses in an industry and create a business where the sum is greater than the parts, so to speak. But what is, can you just speak to the different, maybe biggest mistakes people make, perhaps when trying to buy or sell a business? Like a really simple example is a lot of people try to sell the business, but they are the business and they end up getting caught in an earn out because
Good
there has to
point.
be a handing over of everything and it's precarious for both sides. Can you speak to some of that?
Yeah, absolutely. Firstly, why would somebody acquire a business? And then we'll move into selling, and then I'll definitely answer the mistakes people make on the buy side or the sell side. I tried to start some businesses, and to be honest, I just sucked at it. I didn't know anything about SEO or digital marketing, so I started two businesses and failed pretty fast. And then I came across a stat that 90% of all startups fail from the SBA, Small Business Administration Study of America. And I thought to myself, if 90% of these things are failing, why don't I go and buy one or see if I can buy one that's past that 90% failure rate? So I went out, this is in 2014, so 10 years ago now, a decade ago, and there was not really many people teaching how to buy businesses or sell businesses or on specific online businesses. So I basically taught myself how to do due diligence and research and bought my first one. And then I bought three over a 3 year period. And I learned a lot of lessons then on what people get wrong in acquisitions. So let's answer that question. The biggest thing that people get wrong is not understanding how to do due diligence. What I like to teach people to do, it's pretty exciting first and foremost. Like if you're going to go and buy a business, you can go to these broker sites and see how much a business costs. It might be 100K, it might be $1 million. You can see how much it's making. You can see it takes maybe a few hours a week to run. And you're like, damn, this is good. And people sell themselves the business. They sell themselves the vision of owning that business and what their life's going to look like. So what I actually like to teach people to do to prevent them acquiring a lemon is to, when they're doing due diligence, your goal should be to prove the business is a bad investment. And if you can't, then you must buy. And so that's the biggest mistake people make is starting out envisioning themselves owning this business and what their life could be like. And then there's more little things within due diligence that you need to unpack and understand, different types of due diligence. So you've got, the traffic due diligence, you've got the financial due diligence, you've got competitive due diligence, you've got marketing due diligence, those different types that you need to dig into and ask those questions. What data do we have? Why are you achieving this data? How's it working? And understanding the business kind of under the hood. Then it comes to negotiations. That's a tricky one where people get hung up on. I think most people don't really learn much about negotiations, but from what they have done in the past, their association is go in low and try and get the best possible deal. That is when somebody plays a game with you and you're trying to sell something on,
It
say,
can
Facebook Marketplace or
burn
Craigslist.
trust real
Yeah,
fast.
it's just you don't want to be dealing with your burn trust like no tomorrow, right? It's like rocket fuel on fire. Yeah. Then negotiation, people should understand how to negotiate. And the best way to negotiate or how to understand to negotiate is know the value and the worth of something. So when you come into that negotiation, you can say, this is what it's worth. I'm going to pay this much. If you want that much, I'll acquire it from you. If you don't want that much, then go back to the market and try get something else, versus playing a game.
They said the best strategy to win a negotiation is being able to walk away from the table and knowing what options work for you because you can negotiate on price and terms. There's the
Yes.
two, you might pay more, but then the terms are going to be better. Or, that's a huge
So
topic in and of itself.
to come back to you, I want to answer your other question on the sell side. Where do people get wrong if they're going to sell the business? What they get wrong is being an typically as an entrepreneur, when we decide to sell a business, we need to sell it straight away, which is not good because you should allow yourself a lot more lead time to get the asset saleable, right? Sellable. And what that means is, and I was speaking to M&A lawyer yesterday who deals with this every day, is like his vision was people that want to sell their business have a 36-month plan, a 3-year plan. I think that's idealistic, of course. You can do this in a 12-month period, though. It's harder to do in a 6-month period, depending on the type of business, how big it is. But ideally, the problems or the things that people get wrong when they're selling the business is, like you mentioned, if there's personal brand dependency attached to the business, or key person dependency attached to the business, you want to work yourself out of the business. Michael Gerber, very smart man, talking about not working in the business too much, working on the business. How can you get your staff working in the business? That's a lot more attractive to a buyer. Having your financials in order, that's easy to read, very attractive to a buyer. No key person dependency, very attractive to a buyer. Also, seeing a business that is not going backwards or just flatlining, a business that's slowly increasing over a long period of time, that's super attractive. That's what most people would like to buy. Unless you're the turnaround guy, which I think you should, it's a different kettle of fish. You should have a strong stomach for that. And you should love a lot of stress. And not my kettle of fish, but that's where people really get wrong, is not giving themselves enough time and understanding things they need to do to the business to make it attractive to
I
them.
think those are great tips. I think it's fantastic. And so you say you need at least 12 months. Can you speak to the difference? Is there a difference in types of businesses? You're talking about e-commerce businesses. And then I was thinking about, because this has come up recently with a few different scenarios. And we've seen a lot of this now. Like Zig Ziglar's company was taken over by his son. Russell Brunson is buying Dan Kennedy's empire. Dan Kennedy was talking about how he bought the Psycho Cybernetics brand essentially. For
All
they had
right.
something like 2-3 million copies of the book sold, and he got rights to everything for something like
Was that from Max
$50,000.
Max M
Yeah,
Maxwell? Well,
Maxwell something. He said he spent $50,000 on it, but they had already sold something like 2 to 4 million copies of the book worldwide, and it was because the guy had already passed away. And so the value, and so it was like his wife was left with it and didn't know what to do. So I guess what my question is about
Different types of businesses,
Like e-commerce versus brick and mortar versus an intellectual property-based business with the owner alive versus dead.
Yeah, so that's a great question. Typically, I deal with online businesses. I help people acquire online businesses, not so much traditional businesses. So I can speak to online, maybe not so much offline. I understand offline businesses, of course, but it's not like my expertise. So with the online businesses, you got three main categories, really. You got media businesses, you got e-commerce businesses, and then you got, I would say, recurring revenue businesses. Now, recurring revenue businesses are typically a membership business, and that can be a SaaS product, software as a service, or it could be a digital product like Audible, a membership business. Also, Amazon Prime membership business, Netflix, all these different types of, and then you got SaaS, which is Zoom, Riverside, heaps of different software products. Now, they're great recurring revenue businesses. They typically have a higher multiple because you're acquiring a customer base that's already paying you a recurring revenue stream, which is really cool. Then you've got the e-commerce business, and there's a few different types of e-commerce businesses. You've got Amazon businesses, you've got sell product distribution businesses, and then you've got drop shipping businesses. And these can be from all different channels, TikTok shops, Shopify, Facebook shops, whatever it is. And then you got media businesses, which are amazing businesses. So this book is the Maxwell, I think it's Maxwell Maltz, the Maxwell Empire. And apologies if I get it wrong for the listeners. I would say yes, there's definitely some IP that has been acquired and in the marketplace, and but also media as well. They've acquired that IP that's attached to that media. So a portion of it's a media business where they're acquiring this piece of content that's highly regarded with a great brand and IP attached to it, and they make money through book sales. Other types of media businesses are like YouTube channels, podcasts, blogs are great media businesses, even Instagram accounts, TikTok accounts, Facebook groups, Facebook pages, different types of media businesses.
Got it. What are the kind of multiples that they sell for? Ballpark. Every industry is different, but I think you highlighted some reasons why one maybe worth more another. Like you talked about, the recurring revenue is built-in customer base. It's a built, it's like a rental apartment. It's got a bunch of subscribers that are there. Unless you F things up or the life cycle of the customer expires, that they're going to keep paying. So.
Correct. It's like commercial. I would say I like it to buy a commercial property versus residential property is you're buying something with a great lease put in place, and the value of the business is or the property is very based off the value of the lease. Then you do also have like scalability and opportunities as well within that too. Also with property investment and a SaaS business. Now for the multiples for those, it really depends. You can get them down to a 2 or 3 year multiple, but you can also have them sell for 11 year multiple, which is a pretty phenomenal thing, depending on the business. I think Facebook, I don't know what Facebook acquired Instagram for, but yeah, if Netflix was to sell to say Disney or something like that, it would be a crazy high multiple. So that's membership, software, recurring revenue sort of model businesses. And then you got e-commerce. Typically, you can get some sort of more distressed businesses for around the 1 year multiple up to the 4 year multiple. It's rare that you would see a 5 year multiple unless it's like an e-commerce business that's making most of its gaining most of its traffic and clients from organic traffic. They're the multiples for those that price range. And then for a media business, anywhere from I would say two, typically like two is very low, but maybe 3 to 5 years, sometimes 6 years. It's pretty rare to see it up there, but the average I would say is around the 3 year range, 3 to 4 year range for media businesses. Average for e-com is around two multiple, and I'd say the average for it's very hard because SaaS is such a wide space. You know, you've got pretty large businesses, and I would say it'd probably be around the six multiple. Yeah, 6 to 8-ish multiple.
Got it. So, I guess post-COVID, you talked about how the economy changes more of a buyer's market. When you come in and you buy someone's business, what does it look like in taking over the reins? You've alluded that ideally you want a 36-month plan, but you're going to probably need at least 12. People often do it because they're in a rush. Can you speak to that part a little bit? What does that look like? Someone shopped around, they feel like they've done their due diligence. They're like, this looks good. First of all, are you paying for all businesses in cash? What are some of the payment terms looking like? There's probably people that want to that think I don't have the money to buy a business. Is that real? Is this sort of like creative real estate where you can have a lot of owner financing deals? Is that really common? Like, how do
Yeah, good
people
questions.
afford this?
Yeah, so let's talk about the how to buy them with what sort of money. Yes, I would say 300K and under is mostly cash. Yeah, I would say 300 to a mil is 70 per six 70 60 to 70% cash, the rest financing. But you can get deals 500K where 500K plus where you're doing 80% financing and a 20% deposit. As you start to get into the seven-figure range, then you've got mostly financing. Typically, it's mostly financing. And then there's creative financing where searches will, what we call somebody that's going out to acquire a business and run it, they might actually raise capital from friends and family or will individuals they might may know. And they may raise 500K for a deposit and then get maybe to 3 mil for 4 or 5 mil for in finance to acquire it. So it might be like anywhere from a 10% deposit or cash injection, which can be raised from investors, and the rest financing. It can be done through SBA loans, or it could be done through a company called Bupos for these specific online businesses. So that's the financing options. And then taking over, what does that look like? Taking over the business, it depends on the type of business, right? And depends on what sort of staff is involved with the business. So my camera is going to come back on here. Apologies for that. So with a typically you want to see what work is involved, what staff's involved with the business, and you want to if you want to see SOPs, right? So you typically if you can take over a business that has staff and SOPs, then it's going to be a lot easier transition. But if there's not, then you need to work with the seller to create SOPs and get a bunch of training and then maybe go and hire staff yourself. Depends on the size of the business. Typically, under the 500K range, it's going to be owner operated. 500K plus is the owner starts to remove themselves from the business. Typically, a million plus, the owners, you've got a lot less involvement.
I love that. I love that. I love that. That makes a lot of sense for a lot of people. So I guess you've mentioned the SBA a few times, but you're Australian. So what are you doing with the SBA?
Personally, nothing because I'm Australian, but I work with most people I work with are from the States. Yeah, so 90% of the people I work with, 89% of the people I work with are from the States and apply for the Small Business Administration loan.
Got
Yeah.
it. Got it. Okay. That clarifies that because I'm Canadian. So I was like, oh, I could go to the
I don't know.
SBA.
I don't think Canadians can.
What?
Oh, you're stuck. You're a part of the Commonwealth like me.
Now, I heard that business law and looking when it comes to buying and selling a business is very relatable, we'll say, to real estate law when you look at it. And I wanted to know your thoughts and opinions on that. Is that potentially, do you agree with that? What are some of the differences? What are some of the commonalities? Because again, this is something that for some people, the right purchase can set them free. The wrong purchase can be a nail in a coffin, so to speak. So the legal part is something that maybe most, it's like the book report, people don't want to get done, but it's obviously very critical to this. So can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah. I just want to make it caveat this. I'm not a lawyer by any
Disclaimer,
means. Yeah.
disclaimer.
Or a real estate lawyer, but being on both sides, real I'm real in with real estate and I love real estate, I've acquired real estate. And same with online businesses. Typically with a smaller business, typically under the 500K range, law doesn't play the biggest role yet. And most people don't get lawyers for and under the 300K range. As it starts to get bigger, then you do have laws where you want to see what sort of debt, what's the liabilities that the owner has or the business has. Do they have debt on the business that hasn't been paid? Do they have a bad track record? With real estate, it's a bit different. You want to get a conveyance or a solicitor to see that the not see what debt or liabilities that person has or the trust has or the company has that owns that property, but more so around does that entity own this property? And as for the larger businesses as well, online businesses and even like brick and mortar businesses, physical businesses, you do want to have a lawyer go away and look at does that entity, that company or trust structure own this intellectual property? Do they own these legal contracts? Do they own these contracts with suppliers? Yeah, those sorts of things. So you do want to get lawyers involved to make sure that it's they can actually they own that entity owns those and they can transfer those to a new owner or a new entity. So conveyancing does or law conveyancing, I'm not sure, or solicitor, I'm not sure what you call it in the States for real estate in the States, but you do need a lawyer for checking what you're acquiring is owned by the previous entity. Yeah, and they can transfer it to you. And with that, under the 300K range, we can't do that themselves. Like we check, do you have proof of domain ownership? Do you own that domain? Do you have proof of owning the traffic and the analytics accounts? And do you have proof of owning the Facebook ad accounts, stuff like that? We do it ourselves. But as it starts to get a bit bigger, then you've got different sort of legal requirements. Yeah. So I guess there is some sort of similarities, but with business, you want to be checking what sort of liabilities and debts that business does or does not have too.
Can you speak? Sorry, I hope my questions here seem like a coherent train of thought. Can you speak to the strategy in getting into a business? Because I think that's probably the biggest opportunity on the table. I think with the boomers retiring, it's going to be and probably remain a buyer's market, I think, for a while, just because there's just going to be a lot more people looking to retire than people that are going to be. Like we're already seeing that in trades and that sort of thing. So as people go to approach this and buy, can you talk to some of the strategies of how to make this work versus just buying an income? Okay, someone's got a business, they've ran it for 10 years, whatever, 15 years, they have SOPs. There's a little bit of skill to learn to take over type thing, but ultimately you're gonna take on a debt that it's gonna cost you whatever, 5 years, 7 years of this business income to pay off. to buy this annual salary, hoping that it stays. Is that the basic way you approach it? You just go, oh, I'm going to just buy this thing and be the hamster in the wheel. And in 7 years, I'll have paid it. It's almost like buying a house. Like I'm out of the mortgage and then I start cash flowing and then it's all mine. Or are there other strategies about this that where there's, I understand it depends on your creativity. You get what I'm saying, right? There's
yeah,
some.
I hear you. Yeah, I hear the question. Yeah. And it really depends on how far somebody wants to go. So with real estate, it's getting big now. That people are like, you buy 5 properties, you wait 10 years and you can retire off the income, right?
Right.
That could be a thing. Or you could buy 20 properties. Or you could buy 5 properties, sell them down, acquire larger commercial assets that pay you a better net profit, and then build a proper empire. Now, with business, it is somewhat similar. A lot of people that I started helping out was just because I was a plumber. I started off as a plumber.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. And I was just like, how do I just replace my income? That was my first step. That was my first goal. And I did that. And then I kept acquiring businesses. And then I was like, oh, I've done good. Like I want to serve and help more people. And I like business now. I'm good at business. And I think it's fun. I think it's fun acquiring assets and growing them. And so there's different strategies for different time frames of your life, or different seasons, I should say, of your life. First step for somebody that hasn't bought a business, I would say acquire one and replace your income. Then, but you can use that business, that strategy could be, you could use that business to acquire a larger business or a different type of business. You could sell it off and buy a bigger one, right? Through maybe you buy something and you're running your current income and job for 2 years and you're running your business for 2 years and you save income from both of those. You've got two income streams now. You can sell one off and acquire a larger asset or a different asset class that may be less work and more opportunity. Or what you could do is you could acquire like maybe an e-commerce brand. Maybe you're selling surfing products and you realize, damn, this is like a really good product and a really good business. And maybe it's making, or maybe it's spending, maybe you're spending like 100K a year, right? On marketing. Maybe you're spending $1 million a year on marketing. You can put a zero on it. And then you decide just cut that in half. So it could be like 50K on marketing towards ads, Facebook and Google, and then 50K towards acquiring another media business that has an audience that are surfers that are really interested in these types of products.
That might replace, yeah, buy the company you're paying ad dollars to through Google.
Correct, correct. To steal, hey, right? So you buy out your competitors.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you can do that with a larger budget, right? 500K into Google and Facebook ads, 500K to acquire maybe just one business or maybe a couple. And then you can start to go, all right, cool, I've bought out some competitors, but what about my expenses? Maybe I'm spending 5 to 10 grand a month on a marketing agency. Can I go away and buy that marketing agency and merge that into mine and then also offer marketing agency service because that marketing agency also grows my e-commerce brand? Mm-hmm. What about my accountant? I'm spending maybe 3 or maybe 1 grand a month on accounting. Can I buy my accountant now? So you can acquire out your expenses and then merge them in. And then you can also acquire out your competitors or buy market share is what I would say.
Right. Yeah.
So that's a different strategy. And then you could sell that as a roll up and then get rid of it. And then maybe if you want to keep going, you realize I want to do this, but I don't want to do it with my own money. I've got a track record here. You can go away and pitch and raise money and then do the work without having to put your money in the deal. And you can have some sort of sweat equity or equity stake in the acquisition or the private equity firm that you acquire you build by acquiring funds from other investors. And then how else do you want to do it? It really depends. There's so many different flavors and ways that you can go. So there's no limit, and there's infinite amount of strategies as well. It's a tricky one to really nail down, but there's a bit of a sort of a linear path that people could take.
Yeah, no, I think you answered really well. If I were to try to active listen and say this back, it sounds like first is just try to replace your income so you can free up your time or double your power. So if you can buy something that can be run relatively low maintenance while you're getting your current income, you've doubled your income without doubling your workload. And then you can use that to sell both at some point and level up into something bigger. And then it sounds like almost instead of buying milk, just buy the cow and take that approach to it, right? Where, and that's something that without buying the business, we did in Google AdWords years ago. You would see where Google is showing your ads and where all your conversions coming from going, hey, Google's placing my ad on this website. This is where all my sales are coming. And you just approach that website directly and be like, hey, can I just pay you for running some, and they may even not even know that you're already advertising on their site because they just have the Google AdSense type thing, or maybe they have an email list that you can't access through Google Ads, and now you can advertise through that. So, can you? What are the typically the when it comes to an online business? I know we're going to be approaching the end of the time soon, but I think this is good. We've danced around this a little bit, but to really hit the nail on the head, what are typically like the tangible assets of a company? I feel like you've hinted at some, a contracted customer base that's paying you every month, traffic source. What are the real world things? Because especially with an online business, I think some fear that some people have is what if the power goes out? Right? Or I'm
What
on.
if my sales channel disappears?
Yeah, I saw this one. It was Morpheus from The Matrix. What if I told you the cloud is just someone else's computer? So it's like,
Oh.
what if my business is just on someone else's computer and the server goes out? Like, so in terms of that, what are some of the assets, the tangible assets in a business? If you buy a business, things go sour, you got to sell things off. What typically are the categories or the thing when it comes to an online business?
So with an online business, typically people aren't going to separate the parts or the assets and sell them off separately. But what are the assets? They're not physical assets. They're typically not physical assets. If you've got an e-commerce brand, you've got inventory. You might even have a warehouse. This is the thing, is like with an e-commerce brand, if you want to scale that, you could buy out your manufacturer. And then the manufacturer is renting this warehouse and you could acquire the warehouse. Those sorts of are the physical things that you can sell off if the business is not doing so well, and then revert back to using a different manufacturer and whatever it is. That's the physical part of the business. Now, you're more talking about the digital part. So what are those digital assets? The digital assets are like, for me, I've got a course, I've got an email list, and I've got a YouTube channel and a podcast and those sorts of things. So that each one of those is a physical asset. For an e-commerce brand, outside of, sorry, it's not physical, it's an asset, digital asset itself. So for an e-commerce brand, outside of the physical assets that I just mentioned, the digital asset might be you have an Amazon account, right, that has 1,000 five-star reviews for three products or two products. You also might have a sales channel through Google Ads. That is an asset, that Google Ad account, because it's got so much data in there, or a Facebook account, it's got so much data in there. You might have an Instagram account that you have a bunch of organic followers. That's an asset. So those different things are assets. For a media business, as the assets are the media, right? And then with a software or membership businesses can be the media or the product and or the software, which is the product as well anyway.
So you've got a source of traffic, generally some sort of database of contacts,
Email
vendors.
list database. Yeah,
And
correct.
then you mentioned Michael Gerber before. It almost sounds like you'd have some sort of lead generation system, a lead conversion
Yes.
system, and a client fulfillment system, and that those three, just because you brought up Gerber, that those
Yeah.
three together, the pieces that make that up are what makes the business. How you deliver what you're selling, how you're converting interested people into sales, and how you're finding those interested people to begin with. And then
Yeah,
whatever is
and a
included
business
in
is
that.
just, yeah, exactly. A business just at large is just a system that provides a result, right? That's all it is. And then you can have systems within that system, which is what Michael talks about, your lead flow, all that sort of stuff. So yeah, it's just a big system. And that's what the value of a business is. You're acquiring a system that produces a result versus trying to work out and build a system, which is sometimes a pretty tough job.
And where do you see things going in the next kind of 3 to 5 years, or dare I even say 10 years? There's a lot happening geopolitically. There's a lot of fallout happening from the response to COVID and the overreach of agencies and governments. There's a lot happening. There's a lot of technological breakthroughs. I think there's a lot of hype as well, but
So much hype, man. People,
so.
there's just so much attention on, so much eyeballs on the internet, that and so much is happening on the internet. People just want attention and want to give their attention away as well. So that's why there's so much freaking fluff out there and hype as well. But at the end of the day, there's some real gnarly stuff happening too, good and bad, in the physical world. We don't need to get into any avenues we can go down, but this could be like another big podcast in itself in terms of the digital atmosphere. And then
And
separate to that might
fintech,
be the AGI and tech and stuff like that. So Yeah, in terms of the digital world, is what I probably am better off speaking to, is that the opportunity is crazy because when you think about online businesses, that you got those main ones that I mentioned, media businesses, e-commerce businesses, and like recurring software or whatever it is. When you think about like where things are going in terms of the digital atmosphere, we're only going to lean into the digital atmosphere with VR, which presents far more business opportunities. And just for example, say the metaverse becomes a big thing in the next 3 years, or in 3 years' time, the metaverse is like pretty normal place to hang out instead of Instagram. And if you're hanging out in the metaverse, people are spending, I don't know, anywhere from 2 to 7 hours a day on Instagram anyway. If you're hanging out in the metaverse for 2 to 7 hours, like maybe you want to hang out in a cool bar, right? Maybe that bar has an entry fee, right? And maybe you are, maybe I'm an e-commerce brand and it's a surfers bar and I want to put an advertisement on the wall or on the couch in that surfers bar, right? Buy a couch that's owned by myself, the e-commerce brand, in that surfers bar. The digital atmosphere is only going to increase because that's where everybody's attention is going, which I think the opportunity is pretty insane for businesses to move into those. I don't know much about NFTs. I never really got into it myself. That sort of realm merging with the metaverse or the digital atmosphere. I'm going to call it digital atmosphere because they might metaverse might be just like Facebook, but maybe you've got YouTube comes out with something else. Maybe they've got a virtual in movie screening thing that you can go in and check out. Like, so the digital atmosphere is only going to change so much. Like people might start creating digital VR movies for YouTube and they're making money through sponsorship on it. I'm bullish. I don't think
You're
anybody
bullish
else
on VR, it sounds like.
I don't I'm scared of it. I don't spend time on Instagram. I don't like to spend time on in the digital atmosphere because it's not good for my mental health and I understand that. But there are a lot of people that have are addicted to this stuff. Like most of the world have dopamine addictions, and where the attention's going is where money is going to be made. And that's just where focus goes, energy flows, the Tony Robbins quote. I don't want it to be big. I would prefer us to revert back to a Nokia 6210 or whatever it is, away from an iPhone, even as beautiful as they are. But I'd only think that it's going to grow. And there's a lot of money to be made in the digital atmosphere. It's good for people that want to earn income online.
And I guess one of my last questions to wrap up would be about the habits. As someone who's buying and selling businesses and running multiple and seeing people run multiple businesses, what are the kind of daily, weekly, quarterly habits that you have to be in that position and function?
Man, I love this question. You're just an amazing host, I'm gonna have to
Oh, thanks,
say. You know,
man.
you've got great questions. Yeah, Daryl, I love it.
Thanks,
So
man.
I would say you've got habits and then you've also got behaviors that form habits, right? And I think a behavior that oversees habits, one of the best behaviors is probably discipline for a business owner because you do have multiple things to manage. And as you're having a wife and kids, you also need to have discipline to go, I'm not just going to work all the time, babe. So having discipline for your real life and your business is your real life as well, but also time on work, I think that's really important. And then with discipline, I think becomes focus flows on from that. I think those are the two biggest like behaviors is having discipline and focus. Also, I think a real amazing skill for people to not just have in business, but it's a philosophy that I like for life, is to tune in to your business and listen to what your business is saying. Listen to what your body's saying. Listen to what your environment around you is saying. Be present. And when you listen to your business, it's telling you things that like, hey, this thing's working really well. Oh, this thing's not working. What should I do? Do less of what's not working, do more of what is working, and that's going to help you grow your business with less effort because you're monitoring your resources and allocating them to the best possible place that is going to allow that part of the business to thrive versus the outside in growth approach most people listen to. All these different marketing systems, like I just heard, oh, this e-commerce brand, they made X amount of money through Google Ads. I got an e-commerce business. I need to go start doing Google Ads. But hang on a second. Facebook is like crushing it for you right now, and you're going to take your
Yeah.
ad budget from Facebook to Google. So I think those things like discipline, focus, being present, and yeah, resource allocation is they're very important behaviors and skills to have as an entrepreneur and a business owner.
I love that. I love that. You said one thing about time management. It reminded me. Can I read my favorite poem on time? I just pulled it
Please.
up. I have it
I would
right
love it.
here. I
Yeah.
have a daily planner, and then on it, I have a tab that's like things to review. And is this poem? And one is, it's time is the inexplicable raw material of everything. With it, all is possible. Without it, nothing. The supply of time is truly a daily miracle, an affair genuinely astonishing when one examines it. You wake up in the morning and lo, your purse is magically filled with 24 hours of the unmanufactured tissue of the universe of your life. It is yours. It is the most precious of possession. No one can take it from you. It is unstealable. And no one receives either more or less than you receive. In the realm of time, there is no aristocracy of wealth and no aristocracy of intellect. Genius is never rewarded by even an extra hour a day. And there is no punishment. Waste your infinitely precious commodity as much as you will, and the supply will never be withheld from you. Moreover, you cannot draw on the future. It is impossible to get into debt. You can only waste the passing moment. You cannot waste tomorrow. It is kept for you. You cannot waste the next hour. It is kept for you. I have said the affair was a miracle. Is it not? You have to live on this 24 hours of daily time. Out of it, you have to spend health, pleasure, money, content, respect, and the evolution of your immortal soul. Its right use, its most effective use, is a matter of the highest urgency and of the most thrilling actuality. All depends on that. Your happiness, the elusive prize that you are all clutching for, my friends, depends on that. If one cannot arrange that an income of 24 hours a day shall exactly cover all proper items of expenditure, one does muddle one's whole life indefinitely. We shall never have any more time. We have, and we have always had, all the time there is, by Arnold Bennett, how to live on 24 hours a day. I love
Yes.
that. And I feel like some of what we've talked about this is really about hyper effectiveness. At the beginning of the call, you said, I failed twice in business. And I realized that I had a 9 out of 10 chance that I was going to fail again. And at the prospect of having to do this 10 times to get it right once, I thought, maybe I should just figure someone that's already done that and save my time.
Yeah.
And even your advice to someone listening was find a business, a good business to buy that you can get into, and then replace your income. And now with your income replaced, you're now in a whole different world. And so I just felt that this was a good call for that on talk, like,
Yeah, that's an amazing poem. That's an amazing poem, man. So much of what I hear from that poem is you've got this gift. We've got this gift of time. It's like insane. Let's be totally present with it, you know?
Yeah.
It, yeah.
I love it. I love it. I love it. Jared, is there anything I haven't asked you that I should have asked you?
No, I don't think so. I think, mate, you're such a good host, Daryl. You just, yeah.
Thanks. My
Well
mom
done.
says I'm
Well
cool
done.
too.
Like I just think,
Yeah,
dude, like I gotta listen to your podcast more. Like you're gonna have some great guests on with those questions you have. So yeah, I'm thrilled to be a part of it, to be honest.
thanks, man. If people want to learn more, if they want to find out, where should they go?
Buyingonlinebusinesses.com. I'll just type my name into whatever platform, Jared Krause. And yeah, reach out, say hi. If there's something I can do to help you, let me know. If not, I can refer you to somebody who might be able to.
I love it. So go check out buyingonlinebusinesses.com, BUYINGONLINE businesses, BUSINESES.com, or just give them a search on any platform, LinkedIn, whatever one you prefer. Jared, JARYD, Kraus, KRAUSE. You can go check out our first interview with him as well on the show. Again, Jared, thank you for your time. It's been an honor and a pleasure. I value our friendship and I appreciate you making time today, knowing you have your own podcast, your own following, your own direct reports, your own goals. Thank you for coming and sharing with my audience and I so we can all do a little bit better.
Thank you. I'm very appreciative of you. Thank you so much, Daryl.